This is BSD. Hello and welcome to the Media Weekly podcast from PhD, where normally we break down the week's media news and events for marketers. But it's a very special edition this week to mark this week's International Women's Day. What we are doing is handing over to the amazing Emma Flaxman. She is the Director of Marketing and New Business at PhD UK. She had some fascinating and very important conversations with some of the team there about how we can all help break the bias. Emma, over to you.
Hi everyone, I'm Emma, the Director of Marketing and New Business at PhD UK, the co-chair of our mental health team within OMG and also a champion of our D&I programme here at PhD. I'm joined by Natalie Marshall-Foxwell, who is one of PhD UK's managing partners based in our Manchester office and also heads up our women's D&I team here in the agency.
Thank you, Emma. So as part of our International Women's Day programme this year, with our focus on all genders working together to break the bias, we were very excited to have Mary-Anne Seacart join us as our keynote speaker and be able to stream that to the Omnicom Media Group UK network. Mary-Anne spent 20 years as assistant editor and columnist at The Times. She's very active politically as a commentator, very well respected. She's presented various programmes for BBC Radio 4, was often a guest on the BBC Daily Politics show. In 2021, she published The Authority Gap, Why Women Are Still Taken Less Seriously Than Men and What We Can Do About It. It's an incredibly well-researched perspective on the unseen bias that women face at work. So she came and talked to us about the themes in that book and how to address and counteract systemic sexism in ways that can benefit us all.
So post this session, we thought it would be really interesting to get some male perspectives on this. So here we are with some of our allies across PhD UK to talk about the key learnings they took from listening to Mary-Anne's session, their thoughts on how we can tackle gender bias from within, and their own experiences of witnessing or experiencing bias through their careers in media.
So first up, we welcome John Kershaw, who is PhD Manchester's Managing Director and one of our key sponsors of our D&I programme here at PhD and within the wider OMG group. So welcome, John.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Pleasure. We would love to first ask you, was there anything that Mary-Anne talks about that has particularly stood out for you, first and foremost?
The whole subject, I think, is absolutely fascinating. And I think that everything Mary-Anne said, like I said, I think it's really well researched topic, and I think the whole thing is really interesting. It is slightly depressing, I think, that this situation doesn't seem to have changed as much as you would hope it would have done over recent years. I think the most interesting thing that Mary-Anne talks about, I think, or the element of this that I probably hadn't really considered properly previously, is this idea that gender equality is not a zero-sum game, that actually kind of achieving better parity is as important for men as it is for women in terms of being able to live the lives that we all want to lead. You often talk about this stuff in terms of we need to do it because it's the right thing to do, and it is, right? Of course it is. But I think it's not as often that you kind of see stuff where you go, actually, you should also do this stuff because not just because you're an ally, but also because it will benefit you personally too. And I thought that was a really interesting take on it and a really positive take on the subject.
No, I couldn't agree more. Do you think that is a more sort of persuasive argument then, you know, going back to our topic of how all genders can work together to break the bias?
Yeah, I think it has to be, doesn't it? Yeah, I'd hope so, because I think ultimately we're all kind of selfish creatures at heart. And I say, I think as much as you want people to be altruistic and to do the right thing, I think if you can frame it also in terms of this will also have a benefit on your life too, then I think that's definitely a way to get more men on board. So yeah, I think that hopefully is a really persuasive argument.
And what about, so when she sort of starts discussing about how high-achieving, confident women can sometimes be disliked and how women lacking confidence can be taken less seriously and just how difficult it is for women to sometimes tread that fine line, what advice would you give to both women and men in your teams to ensure that that sort of bias doesn't seep through and we're not kind of, you know, pinpointing those things with specific, you know, with women in particular?
The thing Marianne talks about here is that obviously a lot of this is unconscious bias, that we all carry those unconscious biases. And, you know, I would hope that a lot of the kind of conscious sexism that I think probably was still prevalent when I, certainly when I started my career, has disappeared. But I think the interesting thing that I've taken out of what Marianne has said is actually kind of recognizing we all have these unconscious biases. And I think the, and the fact that, you know, women have them about other women as much as men do. And I think it's just that thing of kind of checking yourself. I think the advice I would give is to be conscious of, are you treating women the same in conversation? Are you allowing women to have as much airtime in meetings as you are to men? And then just some of these smaller tactics, like, you know, Marianne talks about the fact that if you allow the woman to ask a first question in a Q&A session, that more women are then more likely to kind of speak up afterwards. I think just some of these small little tactics that we can all adopt will hopefully collectively make a big difference. The adjectives that we use about men and women in business are still different. I think that's, you know, that's one of the things I've kind of reflected on, is, you know, that you have to look at the content of what people are saying and not kind of who's saying it or how they're saying it.
Yeah, absolutely. She talks about the difference between, you know, competence and confidence are not the same thing. Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose linked to that, do you believe the women that you work with feel just as confident to self-promote as much as the men that you've worked with? And I know you've worked with a lot of great female leaders in your career, and also obviously, you know, there's a lot of female talent through the business generally. So what's your point of view on that?
One thing I have observed, I suppose, is that society and our industry have changed in the many years since I started my career, is that I think we are now more open to more empathetic styles of leadership. I think perhaps the idea of kind of the infallible leader is kind of less desirable than it once was. I think, you know, even a kind of a, you know, kind of in, you know, kind of compare and contrast, you know, like a Donald Trump with a Jacinda Ardern type character. I think most of us would agree that actually that more empathetic style, you know, what you might call more female type of leadership, is actually more more desirable for all of us, not just for women. So I think actually the idea that you have to portray this bulletproof self-confidence is perhaps becoming slightly outdated anyway, and that a degree of kind of openness and humility is actually the best way to lead anyway. So I would say, don't be afraid to not feel confident. It means you're learning and you're growing if you're putting yourself in situations where you don't always feel like you know all of the right answers. But also just don't be afraid sometimes to show that vulnerability, because people actually respond to that and warm to that. And I think that in itself is a good model of leadership.
I think that's a really interesting lens around what we mean by self-promotion, actually. You made a really interesting point on that. And I would say I've observed that through my sort of nearly 20 years in the industry as well, that what we even mean by self-promotion, how people and how leaders self-promote, has fundamentally changed, I think, for all of the reasons that you said. So, yeah, that's a great point to end on. Thank you, John.
No worries.
Today, creating a campaign requires a diverse range of experts from different organizations and different locations. And providing an online environment where they can build a campaign is now a necessity. OmniStudio enables this. bringing everyone together into one campaign planning platform. Our clients can explore existing campaigns or create new ones. So that's Omni Studio, an integrated campaign planning environment, the only platform of its kind, creating remarkable campaigns, creating remarkable growth.
Next up, I'd like to welcome Karan Shetty, PhD's Head of Web Experience in London. Karan, welcome.
Thanks, Emma. Thanks for having me, and happy International Women's Day to you.
So what were your initial thoughts after listening to Marianne's take on the authority gap?
Oh, I completely agree that there is an authority gap between males and females. I mean, you know, we live in a world that has clearly been designed keeping males in mind whilst completely ignoring, female perspective. And, you know, I have to be honest, I haven't had a chance to read Marianne's book. But what I have done is read this incredibly eye-opening book called Invisible Women by Caroline Criado-Perez, you know, where she exposes the male bias in the day-to-day things around us, you know, from the size of mobile phones to, you know, the height of handlebars in public transport to medical treatment and even AI. They all have male bias ingrained in them. You know, so I highly urge everyone to read this book. You'll never look at the world in the same way. That being said, you know, I reckon it's gotten to a point where women have no option but to highlight things that should be obvious. And, you know, perhaps that's, you know, almost to an extent of naming and shaming, really. And, you know, I think that that's the only way we can break out of this male bias.
That's really interesting. In fact, I think I know the book you're talking about. I remember the most shocking part of that was knowing that there's never been a female crash test dummy designed.
Yeah.
It's all men, which just goes to show you that we're lucky if we fit that particular shape and size, I suppose, so we know that we're safe as well.
The most shocking thing for me, apart from the crash test dummies, was the fact that medical treatment, you know, heart disease, the symptoms of heart disease are so different in men and women. And all of the medical textbooks and all the research just takes into account the male perspective, which is strange and, you know, scary when you realize what's going on.
Well, that's the thing. I think if you're obviously paying attention to other symptoms, then you're most likely to misjudge them. In fact, the British Heart Foundation is one of PhD's longest clients, and they did do a piece a few years ago on how heart disease was women's biggest killer. But actually, the all the kind of news that you read about it all tends to be about male heart disease. So that is really interesting. In fact, when we're talking about negative end of bias, it can be hard to prove that your gender is behind that reason. What advice would you give to someone who's experienced bias within their career, and how could they potentially pinpoint where the inequality came from behind it?
Yeah, that's a very nuanced question. And, you know, being part of the male sect, I am not equipped to answer it from a female gender bias perspective. But let me try and approach it from, you know, the lens of someone who has experienced bias before. So, and this is easier said than done. But I'd suggest that, you know, if you're ever at the negative end of whatever bias, first try and speak to people whom you trust, get their opinion, so that, you know, you have a nuanced view of what's going on. And then maybe try and test, you know, test if the bias is valid. So, you know, I'd get someone else to present the same idea, or even, take the same course of action that I did, and see, you know, what the outcome was. If the outcome is drastically different, then you have your answer there, don't you? And
well, that's really interesting.
And, you know, maybe you could raise it with the right sources. Honestly, I don't believe that women need to do this or go to such lengths to prove their point. And I know it's annoying, and it you know, even comes across as petty at times. But, you know, maybe this is a more data-led approach rather than, you know, something that's gray and can be challenged further.
Interesting. We've got a digital specialist mentioning data. Standard. Love it. Marianne mentions that men tend to be more comfortable, like, blagging their experience. Yeah. You know, their confidence kind of overshadows their competence sometimes, whereas women tend to feel they need to be incredibly well prepared and able to back everything up that they're saying. As a team lead, have you witnessed this? Do you agree? And what examples have you seen in this that or for this to be or not to be the case?
Yes, to a great extent, I feel that, you know, men tend to wing it or bull their way out of a situation when they're faced with an unknown. Whereas women tend to be more structured and, you know, always trying to focus on the bigger picture and have no ego or calms when it, you know, comes to admitting that they might not know something. And, you know, this is so in line with what Marianne suggests as well. And you see this, you know, in so many instances, but I think where it becomes most apparent is in interviews. The way men and women approach things are so different. The way they respond to questions, the way they approach a tricky brief, or, you know, they tackle a tricky situation when they have their backs against the wall is so, so different. That being said, again, I don't think it's always the case. And I think, it can also boil down to people's personalities. For example, introverts find it very hard to wing things, don't they? And, you know, obsess over details to ensure that they have, you know, as much information as they need to actually make a decision.
That's a good point, actually. I think the personality types can obviously play across all genders. And actually, it's a bias thing that we should probably take into consideration there as well. Thank you so much, Karen. So last but no means least, I'd love to welcome one of PhD UK's business directors and mental health first aider, Neil Burling. Welcome, Neil.
Hi, Emma. Thanks for having me.
So, Neil, encountering gender bias in the workplace can have a detrimental effect on someone's well-being. As a mental health first aider, you're obviously very aware of how poor well-being can affect someone's ability to do their work with confidence. What advice would you give to peers to ensure that their bias doesn't negatively impact someone's health?
So, in our mental health training, actually, we talk a significant amount about frames of reference. And how important it is to try and understand other people's frames of reference. So I think that's incredibly important in this particular issue that we face in terms of diversity and in terms of the authority gap, is making sure that we are understanding where other people are coming from and taking that time out to ensure that we listen to what they say, but also making sure that we're understanding what other factors are influencing them as a person. Those can range from a huge array of things. So whether it's their upbringing, whether it's their experience in the workplace, whether it's experience in previous meetings, all of those things will help contribute to how they feel about themselves, how they feel about their own confidence, how they feel in certain environments. So for me, the main sort of piece of advice I would give is make sure that you're trying to understand where everybody else is coming from and take that time. Try and get to know that person a bit better so that you can help to understand exactly what their frame of reference is.
That's a really good point. In fact, it might actually help with John's point earlier when he talked about unconscious bias, which all of us obviously have. In terms of if we actually consider where someone's coming from, it might start to negate that as well. We did talk earlier about the fact that conscious bias seems to be moving away, but it's the unconscious stuff that we need to take more consideration of. One of the things that Mary talks about is lack of confidence, and we all know that it can create something known as imposter syndrome. For those who don't know what that is, it's a condition which is loosely defined as doubting your abilities and feeling like a fraud. It disproportionately affects high achieving people who find it difficult to accept their accomplishments. And although research suggests now that men experience this just as much as women, women and women of colour tend to be the hardest hit by imposter syndrome. Do you think the examples in Mary's talk and her book and her podcast around how boys and girls are treated differently from a young age or as adults being ignored or spoken over in meetings are a good example as to why this may be the case?
Absolutely. I think they're both excellent examples. I think if you look at, you just need to look at any particular meeting, and it's as soon as somebody talks over somebody else, That's a huge blow to anybody's confidence. It has to be. You're ultimately just dismissing that person's opinion. You're suggesting that irrespective of what they're going to get onto, the point they're eventually going to make is irrelevant to the conversation. And you're just totally devaluing that individual. I think one of the really interesting things, I think, is from in Mary's book, where she talks about parents estimating their children's IQs. And I found it absolutely fascinating where parents, I'm a parent myself, and let's be clear, my daughter's a genius. But it's fascinating, if you ask parents to estimate their child's IQ, they will estimate a boy's IQ to be higher than a girl's IQ. And that just doesn't bear any sort of, certainly from my experience, absolutely zero relevance in my life, because as I said, my daughter's a genius. But the sort of fascinating example there of sort of how you can, through despite all of the other evidence that there is, so sort of the rapidness with which girls develop language and the vocabulary, the sort of achievements that they have in the sort of in an academic setting as well, all of the evidence would point in the other direction, and yet parents, and these aren't just random individuals, these are parents overvaluing the IQ of their sons over their daughters, and I just found that absolutely mind-blowing in terms of how that could possibly be the case. But I think those are the sort of key examples in terms of why, how easy it is to kind of foster this kind of authority gap all the way from childhood, all the way through into just simple everyday meetings where we give it almost no thought. So I think absolutely those are just sort of wonderful examples in terms of how that can come to life.
That's really interesting. So I'm a mother of both a boy and a girl, and the difference of his physical ability to be quite forward versus hers, who was a bit slower in comparison to her language skills and her writing, and actually she's learning to write her own name now, she's only four, but she's steps ahead of him. And I don't know whether it's because she's a second sibling, because she had a brother to copy, or it is the fact that girls naturally tend to be quicker at picking that stuff up. But it is interesting as parents, if we're negating what's factually happening in front of us, there's no wonder it manifests into the office space and the meeting rooms. Have you ever witnessed in your, well, any of these examples in your career, in meetings and of you around your colleagues? And if you have, what would you do to ensure that actually they're not the cause of things like imposter syndrome, confidence issues, and gender bias, really?
Sadly, I think it's all too often this sort of behaviour is sort of, it's normalised, I think, within a lot of the meetings that we go to. And even now, I think we still see examples on a regular basis of where this is the case. Because we often find ourselves listening to the loudest voice in the room, not necessarily the smartest, it's usually the loudest. And that can be frustrating for a lot of us. So I think the development of hybrid working as well, you'd think that that would have some positives. And I think there are some positives. It's easier for people to put their hand up digitally than it perhaps is to get somebody's attention in a natural meeting room. So there are more opportunities. But on the flip side, I think it's even more difficult to catch somebody's attention, even if you are putting a big kind of yellow frame around your picture with a little hand symbol turning up in the corner. I think it can still be difficult to catch people's attention in various different scenarios. And I think, I guess where I would come from in terms of bits of advice, I think the key one, and it sounds very simple, but we all know that it isn't, is simply to listen and make sure that we really listen, not just pretending that we're listening, but actually listening to the words that people are saying. And then trying to remove a few words from your vocabulary. I think the word "but" is a terrible word. It's one of those, I think at PhD, we developed techniques around action planning that really lend themselves really well into this space, because we try not to dismiss people's, shall we say, rubbish ideas by sort of going into that forum. There's no bad ideas. And often from some of the worst ideas will spark some of the best thinking that we've done. So I think that sort of behaviour and those sorts of techniques are absolutely critical in this space, because they are about allowing people to the space to provide their opinion, giving them, making sure that you are building on ideas, not trying to detract from them. So going from "but" to "and," so it's not "yes, but," which immediately kind of devalues any input that you've had. It's "yes, and trying to elevate that up, sort of elevating that opinion. And another one that I thought of as well, just as a possible opportunity, is to switch around an agenda of a meeting. We are guilty of putting our favourite things up front, and therefore we are guilty of making sure that we spend as much time as is humanly possible talking about our favourite things at the front. But that potentially devalues somebody else whose their opinion might be crushed into that last five minutes. And the last 5 minutes of a meeting never really happen. So that's immediately devaluing them. So why not bring those little 5 minute slots up to the front? Let's cover those off. Or let's go around the room to make sure that we've specifically asking people for their opinion. I think those are the ways that we can help to make sure that we're bringing people into the conversation, but hopefully empowering them as well.
I think that's great advice. I mean, obviously, listening and making people feel comfortable enough to contribute, I think, are really, really key ways that we can start to remove the gender bias, bias in general, and actually make everybody feel as important as each other. I think that's really great. Thank you so much, Neil, and thank you everyone else for taking part. We're really proud to state that Omnicom Media Group is made up of four agencies, three of which are run by female CEOs. At PhD, we've also reduced our gender pay gap to zero. So as a network, we are making huge strides to break the bias, and we're learning every day on ways that we can ensure it's pushed out of our industry for good.
Thanks for listening today. And if you want to hear more from Mary-Anne, you can buy her book. We would strongly recommend that at many well-known retailers, or listen to one of the many podcasts she's appeared on online.
And that's it for this very special edition of the Media Weekly. A big thank you to Emma and all of the team who gave their time to share their thoughts and perspectives on such a valuable and important topic. We'll be back next week.